In the Chinese city of Shanghai have been sacked over a collision between underground trains which injured nearly 300 people. The crash last month was blamed on human error. It added to concern about the safety of China's rapidly expanding transport network. This year's Nobel Prize for Literature has been won by a Swedish poet, Thomas Tranströmer. The Academy said he'd won the nearly $1.5 million prize for his condensed translucent images that it said gave fresh access to reality. Critics have described Thomas Tranströmer's poems as secular prayers which are mystical, versatile and sad. BBC News.
It's actually not the bloody BBC News. This is the UBC News. Good morning. This is the End of the World News from CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Starting 16 minutes late, but the revolution never was going to start on time. Good morning. This is the End of the World News. This is a little something from Palestine.
نحن أهل الشاطئ الآخر
كاميليا جبران
نحن أهل الشاطئ الآخر بشر يتعثر الوصول
This was from glorious state of Palestine. Dead air. So as you may have noticed, the great goulash has wandered back into the environment. Shalom indeed. And here we are occupying CITR.
like a couple of Wall Street brokers.
And the rest is occupying Wall Street.
That's bollocks.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But first, we're going to have a bit of an Amen Tobin day. Yeah. So this is a little moment from Amen Tobin. Amen Tobin, who played the Vogue last week and has this amazing visual show going on thing.
He's a pretty special character, isn't he?
Yeah, and you know, everybody talks about him as this amazing producer from Brazil, but if you go online and listen to his interviews, he's like from Brighton,
right? He's from Brighton,
and yeah. He looks like he smokes a lot of weed. Listen, I'm going to go over to Amen Tobin, and Andy and I are going to get reacquainted, and then Goulash, the great Goulash.
I can hear you in one ear, hang on. Okay.
It doesn't matter if you can hear me.
I can hear you in one ear. Are you there, Mother?
Yeah, Mother.
Are you there?
Would you like to shout out anything to the Finns who are left? The great Finns and...
Listen,
and
I've got so much. It is scary how much we... There's not enough time in the world. We've got a new CD player.
I know.
I just want to say I've got so much love for the world. Seriously, I've had such a brilliant time, including losing a lot of money and things in Italy and... lots of fun. We'll talk in a minute. But Amen Tobin, the serious thing is, he's the guy who did the music for Splinter, right?
Could be.
For the game. He's like the ultimate game guy.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like the darkest, twisted-up motherfucker in the world.
Yeah.
But underneath that is love.
Love.
Which is what we're going to give you today.
So listen, here's a bit of love from Amen Tobin.
Yeah.
And this is a little track called Bedtime Stories.
I'm impressed with the new CDs.
Yeah, listen to it. Listen to it. It plays. Listen to what it does.
Okay.
It's Amen Tobin. This is CITR 101.9 FM. This is the end of the world news, but not the end of the world. It's only the beginning.
Oh, meditation helps us to acquire a space within ourselves, a peace in our heart, where we can have clarity. And from this clarity, we can share our visions and our intentions.
And the people are starting to realize that they're all connected. And so a protest can be on many, many, many issues, and all on the same.
I'm here in solidarity.
I'm here in solidarity.
All the people.
To all the people.
Who are protesting the money grab.
Who are protesting the money grab.
And the fierce warfare, class warfare, that's been waged on the poor and the underserved. That if we stay strong,
I believe that if we stay strong,
the seed that we're planting today, will grow into a movement, that will get the carpet green, off our ass.
Off our ass.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. gonna look at them right there, and I'm gonna say, you took it. And we're gonna take it back. I didn't plan on getting it. I didn't plan on it. But I saw these people, and I couldn't stop. Take me. I submit.
You have to get out of the street now, okay?
I submit.
That means get out of the street. Doesn't mean ignore me and keep. You're on a public street, right?
Sorry, man. It's all right. We'll get you out.
Come here. There's no place to go. There's no fucking place to hide. There's no place to hide.
Everyone just has something like at their core that they're really upset about. And here at least it seems that it's all molding together to be like a structural change.
That's what people have been working on. That's why the general assemblies are here. That's why the working groups are forming, so that people can go into a specific corner like sanitation or environmental or whatever and start forming their own demands.
Right now we're just practicing first aid on people. You know, some people are hurting their feet or, you know, hurting their ankles. We give out like ice packs and stuff, but that's really all we're allowed to do. And if we feel someone needs to go to the hospital, we'll call for them and send them there. These medical supplies came from all over the country. People donated them. We got a big shipment in on Tuesday. You know, they really sent a lot of stuff, which was like heartwarming.
This is a comfort station. Essentially, we provide warm, dry clothing, tents, blankets. We have men's socks, women's socks, men's pants, women's pants, umbrellas, tarp, everything to keep everyone comfortable while they're camping out here. It says that 1% of the population owns 60% of the wealth. Knee deep in debt and they can't find jobs, so that's why I'm here.
Basically feeding everyone. Basically we're getting a lot of donations, and with those donations we're using that to buy supplies and food for everyone. This is our dishwashing area. And then we have feeding tables, so it's like a buffet, basically. And then all our storage is in the center. And then that's our donation area over there.
The importance of having a strong media presence is unquestionable. I mean, we need very powerful, positive media representation. And if we're not getting it from the mainstream media outlets, then we got to do what we just did and create it ourselves. We're not allowed to erect any structures here in the plaza, so we're not allowed to put up any tents. We're not allowed to hang anything from the trees. So when it rains, we pretty much have to just cover everything with tarps. We have one generator, and I think another one just came recently. We're running laptops, we're charging batteries, charging cell phones. We have a bunch of shooters, people out filming, who have signed up for different shifts or who have basically just showed up and said, look, I have a camera, I'm ready to film. We send them out to go film a workshop or a march or a protest, whatever, and then they come back and we have an ingest department where they ingest the footage, transcode it, whatever needs to be done, and then give it to an editor who either edits here or on an off-campus location to bring it back to upload.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
How do you write a good magazine article?
Discorder is that magazine published by CITR 101.9 FM. In it, you'll find reviews of concerts and albums, stories about bands and artists, comics, and more, including a comprehensive guide to CITR's programming.
In the October issue of Discorder, you can read up on great bands like Aunts and Uncles, Ghost House, and Yukon Blonde, cruise the oral history of Mint Records, and enjoy the fabulous cover story of Shimmering Stars. And don't miss the contributors' meeting September 29th at 6 p.m. in the CITR Lounge. Come one, come all.
Discorder is available all over the fine city of Vancouver. For a complete list of distribution locations, why not go online to discorder.ca. Timber beckons you to the Electric Owl Social Club on October 8th for a night of pop, rock, and or roll featuring Los Angeles-based sub-pop recording artists Dum Dum Girls, killer San Diego carnivores Crocodiles, and suspected environmentalist Colleen Green will open up the show. Advance tickets are now available. Go to Red Cat, Scratch, High Life, Ditch Records in Victoria, or visit the worldwide website ticketweb.ca. The doors open at 8, and the party never stops when Dum Dum Girls hit the Electric Owl Social Club with Crocodiles and Colleen Green, Saturday, October 8th.
So, speaking of station IDs, hey, are who are we? Yeah, this is Adam, and Goulash is back.
I'm back, and we've got the camera rolling, and so we're gonna make a little video of this moment right now so that you can see what me and Adam look like, because people have seen me on the YouTube, but they've never, ever seen you.
I look a bit like a dog.
Yeah, with one eye.
With one eye.
Yeah, you're a cyborg. You're probably a new world...
And my tongue is usually hanging out of one side of my mouth going... And in any case, this is the End of the World News. This is CITR 101.9 FM. And today we are occupying CITR. Yeah. I'm doing it on behalf of Occupy Wall Street. And Goulash is doing it on behalf of love.
I'm doing it for love, yeah. I really am, seriously. We have, I hope, lots of new listeners in the big Eurostan. And I've come with financial reports... I want to report on the state of the economics of Europe.
Yeah,
I've got loads and loads of stuff to talk about, but we'll do that at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, we'll talk a little
so
at 9 o'clock.
So what I'd like to do is just set this track up.
Ooh,
so
yeah,
there's a guy in London,
yeah,
who we both know about. Well,
who's
we used Tony Coleman, who's the owner of Hospital Records.
Oh yeah,
and he just put out a new album called Yikes, And then they just put out the remixes, which is even better. And there's this wonderful, wonderful vocalist by the name... Her name is Elsa Esmeralda, which reminds me of Santa Esmeralda, that longest single ever made, right?
Which was Boney M or something.
No,
was
no,
it?
It was way before, but don't even go there. We'll get to that German Schlager later. But anyway, this is a new version of a song that I've been listening to for the last 2.5 months, 9 weeks. I've been away riding my bicycle and riding the trains in Europe, basically doing research so that somebody will pay me to go and do that as a job, I hope.
That would be nice.
I would like that, yeah. I think that somebody should pay me to ride around as an opinionated, slightly rotund, middle-aged Englishman on a bike, ranting at Finnish caravan drivers.
Right. You need a catchy title.
I already have it, Bike Travel Gear.
Englishman Rants at Finns, I think, is better.
There was a fat man on a bike, a show that was...
Fat man on a bike, I like that.
But I don't like, because it was a pompous middle-class twat. Years ago.
Fat man not a twat on a bike.
No, he was a complete
No, but yours could be not a twat on a bike.
That wouldn't play in America.
So about just fat twat on a bike?
No, that it wouldn't play either. Not unless we could change the use of that word. Anyway, that's probably got us banned in Nicaragua or somewhere now.
Can you not say twat in Nicaragua?
I don't think so. How's Chavez doing? He's got a bit of bowel
Chevy?
Cancer. He's got a bit of bowel cancer.
Yeah, but he's got some voodoo doctors sorting him out.
Has he? I think it's a CIA thing. I think they've given it to him. They've done it before. They've done it before.
Who did Steve Jobs in? Was that Bill Gates?
Well... He probably got, you know, they never said where he got his other kidney from, right? And it probably came from some kid in China.
Ooh.
And I guess, you know,
if probably.
No, but seriously, I'm deeply saddened that Steve's gone. No, but seriously, let's talk about this for a minute. There's very, very rich people go and buy organs. Right?
Yeah, but
and prisoners... No, Adam, this is true. Prisoners in China have their organs took out of them in prison. And then they're sold to rich industrialists like Steve Jobs.
It's true, but it doesn't mean he did it.
No, I'm not saying that he did for a moment, but the possibility is there, right?
Okay.
That's all I'm saying. I'm not arguing with you.
No.
I'm saying the possibility is that
Steve Jobs stole his kidney from a very cute little Chinese child. It's possible.
It's totally possible.
Totally
right?
possible.
It's very possible.
It's very possible.
Okay, so can we play this song now? Then?
Yeah.
Okay.
What's the song?
This is Electricity Will Keep Me Warm, and this is for all the coal and oil deniers of the world.
Okay. Electricity Will Keep Me Warm from Hospital Records, Chappie?
Well, it's from Tony Coleman, which is London Electricity.
Oh, London Electricity.
Yeah.
Oh, very nice.
And it's a super lovely tune, and you should... Start bringing it up.
All right, here it comes.
Because it's rolling.
It's coming right up right now. Ooh, super lovely.
It's super lovely.
Listen, I'm feeling warmer already.
You will.
I am.
The video's wicked. Go check out the video on YouTube.
And check out our Facebook page,
yes,
End of the World News Radio.
I'll put it up on our Facebook.
End of the World News Radio. One word, End of the World News Radio on Facebook. Check it out.
You did get a spleen from somebody in China.
A spleen from China? Spleen 0.4. When he gets a new organ, what do they call it?
I'm going to go back to the beginning because this is such a good song and I've been listening to it for 2 months.
Do they call
months.
It like Wombat when he gets a new... Do they give it like an animal name when he gets a new organ? They call it...
I bet if we Google it, once you bring us down, we can find out.
Can we Google Steve Jobs' kidney?
Yeah.
I wonder, since he's died, do you think maybe he doesn't need his kidney anymore? Maybe that could be sold at celebrity auction the way they sell Marilyn Monroe's shoes.
Well, there's a new... Okay, here's one. In Chicago, there's this new statue of Marilyn Monroe with her dress blown up.
Oh,
have
perfect.
You seen that?
No.
It's about 400 feet round, right?
Right.
And there's all these Chinese and, you know, Asian, people visiting Chicago, and they're all hiding under it like an umbrella.
Trying to climb up?
No, they're just using it as an umbrella. It's like the world's biggest underwear umbrella. It's like the ultimate voyeur thing.
I want to know.
So Marilyn Monroe's knickers are about 30 feet across.
Yeah, that must make one great big Marilyn Monroe bum.
I'm going to go find the picture right now because you won't believe me otherwise. Because you're always doubting.
We're just going to gently fade off into the distance. The phone's ringing. Give us a call. 822-2487, UBC, CITR, End of the World News. Peace.
That's it.
To be your hummingbird when I know I can. now the garden gate's not open. I don't think I can get through. I find that instead of feeling tall, darling, there's no need to worry, 'cause electricity will keep me warm.
Yes, there I am. Okay, so that was Santa Esmeralda. No, Elsa Esmeralda. I want to play this next track because I've been riding my bike, and you made a very lovely, sweet, genuinely nice comment as I was riding along, and I heard you talking about me putting my feet where my pedals were.
Yeah,
you know, like, because I don't own a car and all that, and you know, you kind of car share or something.
I own a car.
Okay.
It's a very old car. No. My car is older than you are.
No, it isn't.
But it's older than my daughter.
Yeah, anyway,
she's a doctor.
I found a track this morning from you know Tiesto.
Tiesto.
Tiesto. He's either German or Belgian, and I've played a lot of him on my version of End of the World News, but we won't play it this morning. But London Electric, High Contrast, Tiesto, and Underworld have just done a track. It came out 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And all the like drum and bass heads are all pantsing it because it's a bit dancey and a bit poppy. But Underworld and Carl Hind, I think he's probably one of the best English lyrical poets of the last 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. Because his lyrics are so powerful. But what you have to do is listen, as you said before, we both have to learn to listen when we talk. So I'd like to play this because you're a film star, and I'm a bit of a film star, and it's about using your body and your mind to get somewhere, and it's called Always Loved a Film.
All right, and just before you do that, just before you do that, because we're shouting out, we just had a call in, you know, saying Occupy Howe Street, it's time. And seriously, Adbusters is organizing an Occupy Vancouver nonviolent movement for social, economic, and political change this Saturday, October 15th. It's starting outside the Vancouver Art Gallery. So if you want to join the protest that's going on, the Occupy protest,
Vancouver Art Gallery,
this Saturday, come rain or come shine, go be global. And
You just became stereo.
Wave your fists in the air.
Stereo.
Yeah, like you just don't care. And let's see if we can do something about redressing the great grab of the last sort of 30 or 40 years.
50, 70, 100 years,
yeah. Well, particularly the last 30 years, there's been a huge change in filtering money from the poor up to the rich.
I must say, you and I have both worked in social enterprise type occupations in our lives, right? I got home the other night and I'd not seen the new stadium. Mm. And I thought, I looked down my street, and you know where I live.
It looks like some kind of giant spider
movie. I've got to tell you what I saw. The first thought was, Truffaut, remember Truffaut? Dun, 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 dun. Come on.
What, from what? From first encounters of the Spielberg kind.
Yeah, exactly. I just saw the lights because it's at the end of my street, like a mile away, right? And that's what the immediate thought was, because they've got all these LEDs on the wires. No, because I when I left, it wasn't lit. So it's the first scene, and you know, I come out of my house and went, bloody hell, it's Third Encounters of the Close, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it was, I was waiting for the planes and the, you know.
The pods have landed,
yeah,
baby.
It was totally wicked.
Independence Day. So what's this track you got? Because in 5 minutes.
Always loved a film.
Always loved the film?
Always loved a film. It's from
this
Underworld.
Tiesto Underworld?
No, I'm not going to save that for next week.
Oh, Underworld.
Because I got to get a good version. I got to go buy a version, you see, but I got to get some money first from the bank because they ripped me off, because we'll talk about that.
And in Days of Revolution, before you go out, you should always put on Clean Underworld.
I did, this morning.
In case you have an accident. So this is some Clean Underworld for Andy's mum. Go on, put it on.
Long may she live wherever she is.
Ooh, chunky. Give us a call. Yes. 822-2487 UBC. So this is just a moment from Tim Gerwing, because he lives on Main Street. He's occupying Main Street.
I have to be careful.
Is it called Tim Gerwing's Bikes? And if not, why not?
I always like bike shops, because, you know, I work in a bike shop, but, you know, any bike shop's good for me.
So,
more bikes.
Check out Tim Gerwing online, G-E-R-W-I-N-G, and bike shops. And we're going to go over to the BBC News because it's 9 o'clock. Beep, 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 beep. And then we're going to talk trash about...
The Bullingdon Boys Club Broadcasting Corporation.
Yeah, that's it. Bullingdon Boys Club Broadcasting Corporation. Here's the BBC. God bless them and all who sailed in them. Do you know they've just cut another 2,000 jobs from the BBC? At the same time as they have quantitatively eased another $80 billion into the banking sector.
Yeah.
Who needs the BBC when you have a bank? This is the BBC.
News for Jonathan Wheatley. Two leading central banks have announced new measures to tackle the threat to European economies from the debt crisis and stalling economic growth. The European Central Bank is offering unlimited loans to banks for as much as a year in order to improve their liquidity and to stave off a possible credit crunch.
I'm feeling rather liquid, aren't you? Andrew
Walker. It's just a lot of bollocks.
Banks in the Eurozone are under stress because of the debts owed to them by troubled governments. One symptom is the difficulty they're having in borrowing money to keep going. The European Central Bank has been offering them unlimited loans, but's now doing so for a longer period in an effort to ease the strains. Meanwhile, the Bank of England is providing more stimulus to the flagging British economy by buying well over $100 billion worth of financial assets with newly created money.
Athletes who've served a ban for drugs offences will now be able to take part in the Olympics following a ruling by the highest court in sport. The Court of Arbitration for Sport, or CAS, has overturned a rule which banned athletes with doping convictions from taking part in the next Olympics. The regulation was challenged by the American runner LaShawn Merritt. Alex Capstick reports.
The CAS decision described the IOC's Rule 45 as invalid and unenforceable. It means LaShawn Merritt is free to defend his 400 metres title at the London Games next year. It also opens the door to any other athlete who's received a doping ban which ends before the 2012 Olympics. LaShawn Merritt had argued the IOC's rule amounted to a second punishment for the same offence. US Olympic officials said it went beyond the globally agreed sanctions laid out by the World Anti-Doping Agency.
Social networking sites have been swamped with messages in response to the death of the co-founder of Apple, Steve Jobs. In China alone, more than 50 million messages have been posted on the Chinese equivalents of Twitter. Mr. Jobs' business partner at Apple, Steve Wozniak, praised his achievements.
The greatest, most memorable technology leader probably ever, but at least in our time. He's in one of those in the category of Thomas Edison or Walt Disney. That just, you know, meant so much, bringing life to the world, actually. And, you know, he talks about death being an affirmation of life and that it's just part of the cycle. I think he had a very, very incredible brain.
Steve Jobs died in California after a long battle with cancer. He was 56. Zambia has lifted a temporary ban on all exports of metals, which was imposed until new rules could be introduced. The Ministry of Mines told the BBC that mineral exporters would have to report their operations to the central bank. The newly elected government of President Michael Sata is concerned that not all copper exporters have been accurately reporting the quantities of ore leaving the country. Zambia is one of the top 10 copper-producing countries in the world, and the mineral is its main exporter earner. World News from the BBC. Three subway employees in the Chinese city of Shanghai have been sacked over a collision between underground trains, which injured nearly 300 people. Another nine workers were disciplined. The crash last month was blamed on human error. It added to concerns about the safety of China's rapidly expanding transport network. Reports from North Korea say that children in some areas of the country are severely malnourished and could die as a result of heavy flooding early this year. Pictures showing children in a rural hospital, an orphanage, have been published by the humanitarian news service Reuters AlertNet. Lucy Williamson reports from the South Korean capital, Seoul.
The new report says children in key farming areas of the country are suffering severe malnutrition and some are at risk of death if not given proper help. It says paediatricians there have seen a 75% increase in hospital admissions since the floods this year, and that already malnourished children are developing respiratory infections and digestive problems as a result of their restricted diet and contaminated water. But there's no way of knowing how much these reports reflect the wider picture in North Korea. The government there is very keen to encourage foreign aid at the moment, and this was a tightly controlled visit.
The United Nations estimates that the number of Syrians killed in the months of unrest since pro-democracy protests began in March has risen to more than 2,900 people. A spokesman for the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights said the figure did not include those who disappeared or remained unaccounted for. Syrian opposition activists said 16 people had died in different parts of the country on Wednesday. This year's Nobel Prize for Literature has been won by a Swedish poet, Thomas Tranströmer. The Academy said he'd won the nearly $1.5 million prize for his condensed translucent images that it said gave fresh access to reality. Critics have described Thomas Tranströmer's poems as secular prayers which are mystical, versatile and sad.
I think the BBC has just left us. Do you get that impression? The BBC has just left us. So
they've got no taste, eh? Just
why, sometimes I'd like to take a peppermint and a switchblade and a Cadillac and throw it all in a fire.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Radio for crazy people and the elderly. Oh, yeah.
Okay, good morning. This is CITR 101.9 FM, and this is the end of the world news. Adam is here, and goulash has cycled back into our hearts all the
with
way
a cold
from
and a toothache.
The north of Scandinavia.
And other places.
And he's going to go off and have a fag. And while he does that, I'm going to read you some news from the Occupy Wall Street site and from Naomi Klein and a little bit from the Wall Street Journal, which is kind of interesting. And
I'll then be back.
And yeah. Goulash and Schwarzenegger will be back in a few minutes. So first, if you want to give us a call and talk to us, the number to call is 822-2487 UBC CITR. If you want to pass us some information via email, etc., please check out the Facebook page, End of the World News Radio, all one word on Facebook, End of the World News Radio, and you can post up there. And next week we'll broadcast
what interests you. I'm very much enjoying that people are calling up and telling me things I don't know. So keep doing that. Correct our information. In the meantime, I notice by checking out the OccupyWallStreet.org site that Naomi Klein is appearing today down there to have a little chat at 6 o'clock their time, which must be 3 o'clock in the afternoon our time. She's appearing down at Liberty Square with an open discussion. And she's posted on her site, because I like Naomi Klein, and she hangs out in British Columbia these days from around Vancouver. She's reposted a open letter by Arun Gupta, who runs The Independent. And this is what Arun Gupta has to say about the Occupy Wall Street movement that's happening in the States right now and starting to spread. And in fact, is spreading to Vancouver this Saturday. If you want to become part of the new revolution, whether it works or not, it sure as hell is worth a try. There is an Occupy Howe Street going on. It's a meeting outside the art gallery on Saturday afternoon, and I don't have a specific time, but if you go online, Global BC, Vancouver Media, Occupy Wall Street, October 15th, Vancouver Art Gallery, as we watch the peaceful protest in New York City, Occupy Wall Street explode with massive amounts of people and groups forming similar Occupy protests around the world, we must realize that it's time to stand up with them. And if you want to do something right away, you can just go on to the AVAZ organization, A-V-A-A-Z, AVAZ organization, who are running a petition, and that petition, if you want to add your name to it, is being flashed up on a wall of LED lights across Wall Street right now. So you can actually join in name alone. And somebody's giving me a call, so I'm going to take a risk on them and put them directly onto line. Hello, caller. Are you there? This is the End of the World News.
Yeah, good morning, End of the World News. Peter calling from North Vancouver, regular listener and trying to be hip, dude. It's the 15th in Vancouver.
Yeah, 15th. Isn't that what I said?
You said this coming Saturday, and I don't know where I'm from. I thought you made it sound like this Saturday before Thanksgiving Day, but it's a week from this coming Saturday.
Thank you for correcting me. Are you involved in it at all? Or
I will. I'll be down there.
Oh, nice.
I'll see you bus over.
Good. Well, thank you for correcting.
Cheers, brother.
Simple facts. Okay, peace out.
See you there.
Yeah.
Cheers.
How can I be trusted with a simple fact? I literally don't know what day it is. But in any case, yeah, wait a week. Have Thanksgiving dinner. Fatten yourself up for a long, long sit-in. Prepare for rain. This is from Arun Gupta. The Independent, an open letter to join the Wall Street occupation. What Arun Gupta has to say is, what is occurring on Wall Street right now is truly remarkable. For over 10 days in the sanctum of the great cathedral of global capitalism, the dispossessed have liberated territory from the financial overlords and their police army. They have created a unique opportunity to shift the tides of history in the tradition of other great peaceful occupations, from the sit-down strikes of the 1930s to the sit-ins of the 1960s to the democratic uprisings across the Arab world over the last year. It needs an all-out commitment from everyone who cheered the Egyptians in Tahrir Square, is what Gupta says. He says, our system is broken at every level. More than 25 million Americans are unemployed. More than 50 million live without health insurance. And perhaps 100 million Americans are mired in poverty, using realistic measures. Yet the fat cats continue to get tax breaks and reap billions while politicians compete to turn the austerity screws on all of us. And it hasn't really struck Canada to the same degree. But if you have a look at our federal government, certainly Mr. Harper seems to be of the same neocon brand. At some point, the number of people occupying Wall Street, whether 5,000, 10,000, or 50,000, will force powers to offer concessions. And no one can say how many people it will take or how long it will take. But there is a real potential for bypassing a corrupt political process and beginning a society based on human needs and not hedge fund profits. Who would have imagined a year ago that Tunisians and Egyptians would manage to oust their dictators? At Liberty Park in New York, more than 1,000 people gather every day to debate, discuss, and organize what to do about our failed system that has allowed the 400 richest Americans at the top to amass more wealth than the 180 million Americans at the bottom. This self-organized festival of democracy has sprouted on the turf of the masters of the universe, the men who play the tune that both political parties and the media dance to. The New York Police Department, which has deployed hundreds of officers at a time to surround and intimidate protesters and arrest them and put the boot in, is capable of arresting everyone and clearing Liberty Plaza in moments, but they haven't, which is astonishing. But then again, assaulting peaceful crowds in public square who are demanding democracy might remind the world of the Arab Spring. State violence has already backfired. After police attacked last Saturday afternoon march that started from Liberty Park, the crowds only got bigger and the media interest started to grow. The Wall Street occupation has already succeeded in revealing the bankruptcy of the dominant powers. Their quest for endless profits means deepening the misery with thousands of austerity cuts. And there's all kinds of blogs coming in from Greece right now saying thank you for standing with us because there have been strikes in Greece. Greece is one of the epicenters of the meltdown of the European Union. A whole generation of Americans with no prospects are told to believe in a system that basically offers them dancing with the stars and pepper spray on the face. A generation derided as narcissistic, apathetic, and hopeless are staking claim to a better future for all of us. And that's why we need to join them. There is great potential here. Sure, it's a far cry from Tahrir Square, but there is a nucleus of revolt that could shake America's power structure. Instead of 1,000 or 2,000 people a day joining in the occupation, there need to be tens of thousands of people protesting the fat cats who are driving Bentleys and drinking $1,000 bottles of champagne with money that they looted from the financial crisis and then from the bailouts. The scene in Liberty Plaza is messy and it's chaotic, but it's also a laboratory of possibility, and that's the beauty of democracy. As opposed to political life, flipping a lever every 4 years to vote, social life being a consumer, and economic life being a timid cog, the Wall Street occupation is creating a polyculture of ideas, expression, and art. The biggest obstacles to building a powerful movement are our own cynicism and despair, so says Mr. Gupta. A fully formed movement is not going to spring from the ground. It has to be created. There are plenty of ideas. End corporate personhood for a start. Institute a Tobin tax on stock purchases and currency trading. Tobin. Nationalize banks. Socialize medicine. Well, we've done that. Lift restrictions on labor organizing. Allow cities to turn foreclosed homes into public housing. Build a green energy infrastructure. If the protesters came into the square with a predetermined set of demands, it would have only limited their potential. Efforts would immediately be absorbed by a failed political system. Right now, there are endless objections one can make, but if we focus on the possibilities and shed our despair, our hesitancy, and our cynicism, and collectively come to Wall Street with critical thinking, with ideas, and solidarity, we can change the world. How many times in your life do you get a chance to watch history unfold, to actively participate in building a better society, to come together with thousands of people where genuine democracy is the reality and not the fantasy? For too long, our minds have been chained by fear, by division, by a feeling of impotence. The one thing the elite fear most is a great awakening, and that day may be here if together we can seize it. So says Arun Gupta.
Well, they actually wrote about this about 3 years ago in the defense documents that came out from the U.S. Military and the British military, saying that they expected this, you know, the rise of the middle class as a real fundamental issue. And they kind of, you know, they primed the pump and the international oligarchs, money men. I'd like to report from Europe, if I could.
Yeah, please do.
A little bit about what I've seen over the last 2 months. I started in Berlin, although I actually started in Frankfurt. My trip started in Berlin and I headed north to the far north of central northern Norway. How's that? Is that better?
Much better.
Much better.
Much better. Now you don't even have to shout. Now you can talk.
Yeah, well, so one of the things I travelled in countries that I'd never been to before. So I was in Finland and Sweden, which I'd never been to. Norway I'd spent a year in previous life. And I spent a lot of time in Germany. And I actually travelled through the previous DDR. What was the DDR? And as you know, those listeners who've been listening for a while, I spent time in the 80s as a soldier in Berlin when it was a separated city. So to Mogrify out of Berlin through what was the DDR to the northern Baltic coast to a town called Rostock, which was a Baltic state and was part of the free, you know, the free and all that. And there's lots of investment everywhere. Germany is still the industrial powerhouse that it has been for almost two centuries. But underneath the veneer of loveliness and things getting built is this corrosive sub-economy of poor people from the third world doing all the poor jobs. This is what I saw right across Scandinavia. Extreme.
What, you mean like Turks and things like that? You mean
Somalis, a lot of extreme racism. And I really worry. I saw lots and lots of building sites and lots of new shops and people driving BMWs and all the rest of it. But underneath that veneer was a third world population that is driving, or is this the workers, because the rich Western white populace no longer want to work. It seems that way. They don't want to do the dirty jobs. They don't want to do the menial task jobs. So their wages are higher. You know, it's very hard to, you know, encapsulate in like 2 minutes what I saw. But
basically you're saying that there's an underclass from elsewhere who are doing jobs for low wages.
On the days when, like in Germany closes on Sundays. So if you go to Germany on Sunday, it's closed, right? It never used, but in some of the bigger cities, it's always open. But in small towns, it's closed.
Yeah.
Everything's shut down. Same in Norway, same in Sweden, same in Finland, which is really disconcerting when you turn up in a town on a Sunday and you want to buy something and you can't get anything. You can't even buy groceries, right? Because I'm coming from the North American culture where I can go shopping almost anytime.
24/7.
And it was very disconcerting.
As a human right, my right to shop.
Yeah, and I mean, that kind of falls into this thing of, you know, occupy the Wall Street thing. The whole point of the Wall Street thing, I think, and, you know, and it's happening in Europe as well. The Europeans are fundamentally broke, right? The banking system has screwed everybody around the world. It's not just New York. It's not just Wall Street. It's in Berlin. It's in Rome. I was in Italy 2 weeks ago. Italy's seriously broken.
Yeah, no, what seems to be happening is potentially not just a little blip, but kind of the collapse of the capitalist system that we've been...
Well, one of the things that I've been reading about in the last 3 days is that the German Bundestag is already asking the printers to restart printing the Deutschmark because they are going to pull out of the euro. And here's the biggest driving engine of the euro. Right, the Germans are the money behind everything in Europe. France comes a close second, and then followed by some of the, you know, the other countries like, you know, Belgium or something. But essentially, Germany, the populace in Germany are seriously pissed off, and they're being played left against right, you know, green against blue, yellow against red, whatever you want to say. They've been sold the bill of goods that the Greeks are a bunch of baddies, and the reality is that they're not a bunch of baddies. They were sold 10 times over. You know, we did that thing last year with that financial play that you did, right?
Sure, yeah, power of yes, yeah.
Yeah, you know, they were sold, you know, the debt was sold by Goldman Sachs, who's in Obama's fucking, you know, group. You know, what's his name? His number one finance guy, not Bernanke, the other guy. Sumner, right, or whatever his name is, you know, he's an ex Goldman Sachs, you know.
Oh, there's no question that the banks are involved with the politics of America, and that you cannot be elected without an awful lot of money from Wall Street, and that they need them. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, and when you meet regular people on the street in Europe, they just want to get on with their lives, just like the people in New York, just like people in Vancouver. And what I mean, I think the feeling of apathy that you mentioned earlier, or, you know, a lot of people are super apathetic because they feel like they've got no power. And then all these revolutions or countercultures or whatever are all co-opted by money.
Well, and to a large degree, we're co-opted. We're, you know, we want our stuff. We want our shops to be open.
No,
we want our new computers. We want our new iPhone. So we're co-opted by the sexy things that they sell us in favor of life. Can I offer a little a little focal point to what you're saying?
Because I'm kind of going off in some
Well, let me give you this little focal point. So just give me 3 minutes to get through this, and let's discuss this. This comes from Paul Kingsnorth out of The Guardian, and he talks about a man called Leopold Kor who 50 years ago,
I read this.
Warned that it was size that was the problem.
Yes.
So let me just go through this quickly. What this article says is that living through a collapse, and nobody wants to admit that this is actually a collapse, the result of a half century of debt-fueled growth, it's becoming impossible to deny. No one wants to be the very first to say that actually the dam is cracked beyond compare. There's plenty of people coming forward with big ideas. But here's a new thought. What if big ideas are part of the problem? What if the problem is bigness itself? The crisis is a crisis of growth. It's not a crisis caused by too little growth, but by too much. Banks grew so big that their collapse would have brought down the entire global economy. So they were bailed out with public money, which precipitated social crises. The European Union has grown so big and unaccountable that it threatens to collapse in on itself. Corporations have grown so big that they are overwhelming democracies. The human economy has grown so big that it has been able to change the atmospheric composition of the planet. Now, one man who would not have been surprised by this crisis of bigness was Leopold Kor. Leopold Kor, he began a book which was published in 1957 called The Breakdown of Nations, which laid out a radical case that small states, small nations, small economies are more peaceful, more prosperous, and more creative than great powers and superstates. This was a bit unfashionable back in the late 50s, which was the dawn of the space age, a time of high confidence in gigantist technology-fueled destiny. Political thinkers were talking about creating world government, about uniting humanity, while Kor claimed that society's problems were not caused by particular forums or social economic organization, but by the size. Socialism, anarchism, capitalism, democracy, monarchy, all could work well on a human scale, a scale at which people could play a part in the system. But once scaled up to the level of our modern states, all systems become oppressors. Changing the system or the ideology is not going to prevent oppression, as revolutions have shown, because the problem is not the thing that is big, but the bigness of the thing itself. When people have too much power under any system, they abuse it, even if the power is in the hand of the consumer. The solution to the world's problems was not more unity, but more division. The world should be broken up into small states, roughly equivalent in size and power, which would be able to limit the growth and thus the domination of any one unit. Small states, more flexible, less capable of waging serious wars, more accountable to their people. Bigness, predicted Kor 60 years ago, could only lead to more bigness. Growth would become cancerous and unstoppable. There was only one possible endpoint, and that is collapse. And we have now reached the point that Kor warned about, the point where instead of growth serving life, life must now serve growth, perverting the very purpose of existence. Kor's crisis of bigness is upon us, and we're scrabbling to tackle it with more of the same. Tighter global governance, geoengineering schemes, more economic growth. Big, it seems, is as beautiful as ever to those who have the unenviable task of keeping the growth machine going. His downbeat but honest conclusion was that, like a dying star, the global system would in the end fall in on itself and the cycle of growth would begin all over again. Before it did, between the intellectual ice ages of great power domination, the world would become little but free once again.
Well, you know, one of the books that's been very influential in my life that was given to me by my second ex-wife, I just thought I'd throw that in.
Are we gonna tell time now by ex-wives? Do you get another ring every time?
I've got to tell you this. Yeah. I've got to premise that statement with this next statement.
All right.
I was flying back on Air Transat, which is a lovely airline because I paid the extra whatever it was, and Skelter sat at the front.
Oh.
And got the bigger chair and nice service and the nice cake and lots of chocolates. And lovely. I was with a couple of princesses from China, you know.
Very nice.
Who had been busy buying up Gucci.
Joined the Transat elite.
Was great. I've never travelled Transat in the first class, but it's not called first class. It's called, like, you know, Journeyman or something. Anyway, here's the thing. Do you remember that movie, Arthur?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, when I first got married, my first time, I fell madly in love with a lovely woman who I love still deeply. And Arthur was the movie we watched the night we got married. And so I was watching the Russell, whatever he's called. And Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, Adam, as you get older, I think you just become more emotional. My eyes were stinging red raw like a little kid with tears the whole bloody film because it hits every emotional button.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I was kept referencing back to the moments.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing was my daughter, whose name's Laura, got that name because of Christopher Cross, who was the main singer in that movie, right?
Yeah.
So that, having said, so Small is Beautiful. And so to the next thought, I just thought I'd throw that in because it was just... It's funny how Hollywood's so good at manipulating. It's good how media is so good at telling us, oh, this is the problem, look at this problem, when in fact it isn't the problem, right? And I think that part, what you just read there, is that gentleman 60 years ago said, look, this is a potential problem. And with the hindsight of time, we can look at it and go, yeah, he was right. So... You know, we all get all caught up on this show or in general about, oh, this is the problem I've got to talk about at the water cooler today, or poor Steve Jobs died of, pancreatic cancer or whatever. Here's what I've found as I've travelled around, and I've travelled a lot. Most people just want to get on with their lives. And I think what's fundamental in that statement is that, can we just be left alone? And I think that because of the bigness, right, you know, that's the problem. I absolutely agree with that statement and that little piece you read there. We have to get back to doing the local. I was in Christiania in Denmark.
You went to Christiania, which has been saved from...
It's been totally saved. Yeah. And they've got
last week.
And they've got a thriving economy. And they've got
This is a free hippie community in the middle of Denmark.
But... they've got a serious Russian criminal drug problem, right? Because all the thugs have moved in. And Russia's broken, seriously broken. I came across an awful lot of very, 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 very rich Russians traveling around in very darkened Mercedes, one can say. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a lot in Milan, and I saw a lot in Rome, and I saw a lot everywhere. And this drug trade, which is funded by the flipping banks out of Afghanistan, out of the war thing, you know, I mean, ultimately the money that's generated by drug sales is coming out of Afghanistan, heading into Central Europe, going through the Caucasus, heading into Central Europe and destabilizing, you know, normal society. So that, you know, in amongst all this crap about the bankers, there's these other things that the bankers are doing. And I think... Roseanne Barr, you know, the actress, she came out the other day and said on Max Kaiser's show that we should guillotine them. We should put them in court. And if they...
Guillotine whom?
The bankers who've done these crimes. And they've literally done... They've killed people. People are dying because of their actions, like pensioners, and people's pension schemes have evaporated and people are in absolute poverty around the world. And that's fueling, you know, all these problems that, you know, that Europe's having with influx of financial refugees from Africa, financial refugees from you know, the Horn of Africa, you know what I mean? And Italy's completely broken because Berlusconi and all the others are before and, you know, during and whatever, have sold off all the infrastructure in Italy so that where there was a national... And I went travelling on the train... And it's really apparent when you get on a train whether the state of what a country, where a country is at, you can really judge it by their infrastructure. You know, like you can go in and, you know, fly in first class and get in a nice limo and go to a conference and talk about financial problems, right? But when you get on a third class railway, that's been underfunded for 50 years and the rolling stock's 70 years old, then you really see. But the profits that that rail company is making is going to offshored bank accounts, right? And, you know, the same happens here, the same happens in the UK, the same is happening in America, right? Infrastructure and people's quality of life has been underfunded for, like you say, at least 30 to 50 years. We've been spending money on blowing things up rather than building things up. And I think if anything comes out of any of these little revolts, that's where I want it to go.
Yeah.
I want people to listen to this show and get off your flipping ass and do something.
Okay, so I want to offer, you know, because...
That was a bit of a rant.
Of course it was, but there you go. It's a good rant. No, listen, this is the thing. I think the danger of feeling like a victim is you can't do anything.
No, I'm not a victim.
No, I'm not saying you are. Don't be defensive now. I'm not saying you are.
I don't see myself as a victim. I see myself as a victor.
So what I'm always looking for is where we can take responsibility.
Exactly.
And this interests me. And one of the things that we can take responsibility for, here's a letter from Edward Butterworth in Victoria, in BC.
In New Zealand?
Yeah, no, in BC, yeah.
Okay.
Edward Butterworth.
In The Guardian.
Yeah, he says that all the progressive groups that he has ever known have long since left behind the dysfunctional Roberts Rules of Order.
Exactly, get rid of that, it's a lot of crap.
Which is about opposition, it's the politics of opposition, let me finish, in favor of consensus and dialogue. In favor of consensus and dialogue. Debate where people have to adopt opposing positions is not conducive to the collaboration we need. Let's move on to a real collaborative democracy, which means...
But that doesn't mean governance, though.
No, it doesn't. It means we need to debate things in a different way. And I want to take this to something that I've pulled out of the Wall Street Journal.
Okay.
Yeah, about what's going on in the Occupy Wall Street thing. But first, what do you have to say?
Well... Having been in the biggest communist system ever, i.e. the military, any military is communist, right? It's top-down. It's pyramidical. You're at the bottom, you get told what to do, and you do what you're told, which is just like the five-year plan from Mao or Stalin or Lenin or any of those guys, or any sort of totalitarian... It's the ultimate totalitarian state.
Well, let's call it totalitarian rather than communist, because communist really means... rule from the workers, that the proletariat.
That's the inference.
That's communism.
The inference.
Okay. And what you're talking about is totalitarianism.
Okay,
right?
So I used to work in any soldier in any country, any soldier I've ever met, I can completely relate to because we all went through the same system, based on Roman or Greek or Prussian, right? So, Mao used the Prussians or, they used, von Clausewitz or whatever, right? The art of war, all these tools that generals use to control systems. And I think one of the things... Oh, we got to turn it on, mate.
There you go. Carry on. You just ignore me.
So one of the things I think that, having been in this, in a system where you had actually had no voice, right? One of the things about... that's used a lot by the American military, the British military, the French. We're defending democracy. Well, the soldiers who are defending democracy don't have a say in it, right? They're usually working class kids who are coerced into, joining a military for whatever reason, whether it's economic or, they get to fly around in planes and drop bombs on people. And that's sold as a wonderful thing to do. But there is an element within every military of... groupthink that gets the job done.
Yeah.
And I think if we could take some of the elements from, that military sort of thought process, right? Of, like, I said to myself, okay, I'm going to ride from here to here to here. What do I need to do to go do it? I rode 5,000 kilometers. I did it because mentally I can do it. It's the physical's not the issue. That gets, I get sorted and I get into the groove. But I had to mentally focus and really focus and achieve my aim every day to get that trip done, right? There was nobody helping me. If I've got to ride 120K to get to the next bank machine to buy the next week's food, that's what I've got to do. And I think human beings have this amazing ability to focus, that we get sidetracked by all the baubles.
As long as they have clarity of purpose,
exactly.
Which is where armies have this great advantage, because
exactly.
You have a clear purpose,
exactly.
Which is to kill the other guy.
Or take a piece of ground, or hold a bridge,
clear
or whatever.
Purpose.
And I think if we can take that element of the human spirit, right, and you look at the... I was just in Rome, and I was blown away by Rome. I thought, what a biggest con jobs I've ever seen. It's like, seriously, it's probably the best con job ever.
What? What's the con job?
Here's the con job. This is what I saw. A bunch of stones, right? 2,000 years ago, they had a war. Everything got smashed up. They said, should we build up? Should we build some new? And they went, nah, let's just leave it around. And people will just come and check it out. And so they've been working that room for like 2,000 years at least, right? I was just, you know, like, I mean, I know that's very flippant, but...
In fact, we've been building banks that are based on that model as well. All the banks of the world look like these old Roman buildings.
Exactly. But, I mean, I just found it really funny that there was, you know... I've got to tell you this other quick story. I'm in Milan. It's Milan Fashion Week, last 2 weeks ago, right? And there's a church, like a big cathedral. You know, it's Catholic, right? And there's a poster 100 feet square on the side of the church for Dolce & Gabbana, right? So I said to the waiter at this coffee shop, I said, hey, listen, mate, it's a bit of like the Church of Fashion. And, you know, like I'm bad-mouthing the church, right? He's like, cardiac arrest because he's a good Catholic. And I'm like, no. If there is a God, check this out for a mind, whatever. If there's a God, the God that...
He wears Dolce & Gabbana.
No. It's better than that. This is one of those thoughts you have when traveling, especially when you've been on your own for a few weeks,
yeah.
Right? If there is a God, right, of whatever flavor you want, the same person, the same creative thought that made that cathedral also made the fashion. And they're both, in God's eyes, beautiful.
Yeah.
And I thought...
Especially Dolce & Gabbana.
No, seriously. I mean, because part of it was the capitalism and the consumerism and there's this, you know, the walk. And there was literally hundreds of Mercedes all blacked out with I will only say, concubines in the cars. Like, there was either supermodels or trophy wives buying clothes, right? And, you know, I have this thing about consumerism. I love it and hate it at the same moment. And so here's this engine of consumerism just flailing around me, right? And here's this medieval cathedral that was built with all this love for a sentient being that we don't really know whether he exists or not, right? But the creativity that created the church or that building also created the clothing. And I thought it was quite interesting, the juxtaposition.
Okay, so let's take this idea and go forward with it. Because what we're looking for, I think, is we're looking for a new set of values so that we can all march forward with a purpose, with a set of purpose.
I think that's...
But up until this point, the set of values has been to put
skewed.
Mankind on top of the pile and to get more for our side. You know, that's what we've been doing, and I think that's why we created this God in the first place, and why we created the cathedral, and why we created the fashion, was because all of this is a value system that puts mankind at the top of the pile with the world around us there for us to exploit. So this is also what the Wall Street banking model has been doing, is like putting the Wall Street banks on top of the pile, the governments on top of the pile, with everything else there for us to exploit. So what we're looking for now in consensus is a new set of values that we can march towards that is something other than I want a new PlayStation, I want an iPhone
4. So that brings you back to that piece that gentleman wrote 60 years ago.
Smallness.
Saying smaller. So
I say one of the new sets of values is that things that really make people happy...
This turns off after 5 minutes.
Things that really make people happy are better connections with their loved ones,
yes.
Better connections with their community. In fact, more time with each other and less stuff.
The more I see
all the stuff we're using now, I look at people on the bus anymore. Nobody ever meets anybody or talks on the bus anymore because everybody's texting, everybody's got headphones on, everybody's in their cell phones, you know, and we're becoming not more connected, but less connected by all this stuff.
But here's what's interesting, because I saw a shitload of texting, right? And I went, part of my journey, I wanted to go and, for all the greeny eco loonies out there, I wanted to go on, and you'll see this, and I'll talk about it in the coming months or whatever. I went to the world's biggest iron ore mine, okay, which was built by the British with the Swedes in northern Sweden, almost northern Norway. And none of the goods that we use today and have used for the last 200, 300 years since the dawn of the Industrial Revolution essentially would happen without some of this ore. Okay. And I wanted to go and see the railway because I'm fascinated by railways, because railways for me...
Well, you're an engineer.
Well, yeah, but also my passion for railways, my passion for railways is that as a child I could get on the railway and it took me somewhere that I wasn't, I got somewhere. Mm-hmm. But I got there at a relatively human speed.
Yeah.
Now, jump forward to the 21st century. I was on a train the other day, last week, coming from Rome to Milan, the Gucci Express. I got on it at 6 a.m. in the morning. The first thing they gave you was an espresso and a piece of cake. We went 300k an hour and we were in Rome, from Rome to Milan in 2.5 hours. And it was absolutely phenomenal. And if we're able to do that, mm-hmm, and join communities that way, mm, why the hell are we bombing things? Why are we making rockets? Why are we making bombs? Everybody who's listening to this show now, write to your MP, write to the Prime Minister. I want out of NATO, I want Canada out of all the wars, starting today. Write to your MP. You want to do something positive? Start with that one.
Yeah, and it's true, the American economic collapse wouldn't be happening right now if they hadn't spent trillions of dollars in wars.
They're in 170 countries. They're in almost every country in the world. They're bombing 6 countries right now.
And they're spending more money on the military than has ever been spent
and
by any country in history.
And if you listen to the left or the right in America, you hear the same thing. Oh, we can't defund the military.
Yeah.
Because they're both bought. The left and the right are paid up. Yeah. They're paid up. So back to the small is beautiful. I think everybody should please go check out probably on Scribd. You can get hold of a book called Small is Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Which was written by F.W. Schumacher, mm-hmm, who was a design guru in the 60s, who started Designs for the Real World. And many, many years ago, I worked in Africa on a famine relief and was deeply moved by what I saw in Africa in the mid-80s. And we're still doing it. So write to Harper, tell him you want your money back. I want a refund for all my tax dollars. I'm serious. Mm-hmm. If we're going to make a change in this world, let's start with that. I want my money back. I want a refund. I want all school loans written off.
Okay, well, let me give you a forum for this, okay?
Okay.
Carry on. Let me give you a forum for this.
I want school loans written off. I want high-speed rail across Canada where it's physically possible. And where it isn't physically possible, build some new roads. Now, talking about the EU, can I just quickly intersperse a thing about the EU? You know, that was reading about these big systems, and a thing that came up as I was riding across Finland. I have to laugh because it's funny. Every large city, or every city of about 20,000 people or more, and there's not that many of them in Finland, so it's very easy to see quite quickly what's actually going on. They got a bunch of EU money for joining the EU, right? So then the local governments, you know, the province or the state or the city, has to spend the money, right? So guess what they've done? Every town has got 20 kilometres of freeway. At the beginning, there's like one road going north. And you come into a town and the last 10K is freeway. So as a cyclist, you can't ride on it, right? So it's like, you bastards, you ride the same road for 150 kilometres and then the last 10K, you're going from pillar to post trying to get into the town and then leaving the town the same again. And the reason they've done that is because they had to spend the revenue to get the revenue.
Right, yeah. They and have to spend the budget to fill the budget.
And
yeah,
that's sure. And that's the real fundamental issue here.
All right.
Is in that small big thing is that, you know, politicians, I have been away for 9 weeks, right? And I pick up a province yesterday afternoon as I'm doing my laundry and we've got 2 cents on the gas. And I know that everybody's apoplectic about it, right? And they're probably having kittens.
Well, adding 2 cents to pay for transport.
To pay for transit, yeah.
Yes, great idea.
I think it's brilliant.
Yeah.
I think it should be 37 cents a gallon on top of.
Sure.
Just because, you know, build more railways, man. Mm-hmm. Build more.
Well, Gregor Robertson is at least going in the right direction here. So listen, now
okay,
pass the mic over to me for a moment.
Okay.
Yeah, give it over.
Okay.
Give it, girl.
You can, and then we're going to play one track before we go.
Okay, and Charlie has just wandered in looking spiffy as ever, and we are preparing the road for Sweet Hot Jazz.
I'd like to say coming up at 10 o'clock. Thank you to him for covering for us.
Yeah, Charlie did some great coverage for us. So let me just do this, because there's a couple of ideas that I'd like to put together. One is, again, again a week from Saturday, not this Saturday, as I said, but a week from Saturday after you've stuffed your belly with turkey.
Is it Thanksgiving
this week, Canucksgiving this weekend.
This weekend.
And then next weekend, next weekend, there's going to be...
Turkey.
Next weekend, there's going to be a protest outside the art gallery or a gathering of an Occupy
House Street.
Why does
it take 2 weeks for the West Coast to get up to speed
with
New
York? Don't worry about it, mate. Now listen, and this is a forum... The whole idea is not to get up and yell and make a noise, but the idea is to get together with like-minded individuals and start discussing towards consensus what we think might be a better way. So the ideas that you're putting forward, the ideas that you're putting forward here on air should be going down to the art gallery on October 15th to discuss with other democratically minded people to see if we can work towards a consensus. Because listen, this is I pulled this out of the Wall Street Journal, and it's
that tome of loveliness.
Yeah, well, it's kind of interesting. No, actually, I pulled this one out of The Guardian because The Wall Street Journal did something much cutesier about, you know, call your mom if you're going down to protest. But out of The Guardian, what they actually did was they went looking for who the action committee is that is organizing actually down on the site of the protest. And I'm not talking about whether there's money behind it or anything like that, but there is a direct action committee, one of several horizontal working groups that have sprung up to ensure that the protest is kept in the public eye, with no leaders down in the Wall Street protests in Liberty Park, no list of demands, and a focus on a democratic, decentralized system of General Assembly, which has been borrowed from protests in Spain, in Greece, and in Tunisia. It's a major challenge to retain momentum and to make decisions that speak for everyone among a few hundred students, campaigners, and others who are camped out in Zuccotti Park. Their wider network of support. They're discussing tactics in the open, but they understand as they do that anyone, committee members included, could be an undercover police officer. They know there are undercover police officers amongst them. And what they're doing is they're organizing marches. But more importantly, what they're doing is they're discussing what it is that they actually... Let me finish. What it is that they actually want, as opposed to any centralized control of what the demands are. And what the American press is saying, what the New York Times is complaining about is... Yes, but it's chaotic, and they don't even know what they want, and there isn't even a list of demands. And what the Wall Street Journal is saying is actually this is the strength of the movement, that it's not controlled by a specific list of demands. It's actually in search of a new set of values and a new way forward, and that they're in search of a decentralized democratic process where we actually discuss towards a consensus. So that's what I offer you next a week from Saturday. Down in front of the art gallery. Now you speak.
I would say that if you covered the thing about Christiana last week, I mean, I had literally a couple of hours in Christiana, I was with a bike shop owner, and he needed to buy some pot, right? You know, as you do. So there's a pot street, and if you start running, everybody panics because it's completely illegal or something. Anyway, but it's the second biggest tourist attraction after Tivoli Gardens. There's my plug for Denmark. Denmark's wonderful, but it's very windy and it's not flat.
Okay, but what about Christiana?
Well, Christiana is this community that took over an ex-military warehouse barracks, and over the last 40 years, 30, 40 years, has evolved into this self-governing, wonderful little community that looks after itself. And I think you're right, and I think I'm right, and I think everybody else out there is right. Most of us don't want to go to the big box. Really, we don't. But we've got our options have become less and less. We've become more corporatized. We've become more homogenous.
We want it cheaper, too. We want everything cheaper, stuff cheaper.
I think that's even... No, I disagree with that, because having been a manufacturer, and you know the trials and tribulations that I went through with that, I think now... The world is waking up and saying, you know what, I'm not buying this anymore. I'm not buying crap. Like, I bought a German-made flask. I was in a store, and the choice was, do I buy one made in China that is going to break in 2 weeks? And I'm sorry if this offends somebody from China, but pull your finger out your ass, sort yourself out, and make things properly. I am so sad. I grew up in a manufacturing capital of the world. The manufacturing capital of the world, Manchester, where people actually had pride in what they do. And if what we're talking about here is having pride and caring about our local community, we've got to get back to that. We've got to make things locally. We've got to buy food locally, and we've got to move away from this globalized bullshit that is killing us all. Every last mother on the planet is getting screwed by this system. So get local. And yes, I know there's an economic nature to all this, and we how do you go backwards? Well, maybe we end up back in the yurt somewhat.
You know what I think it comes down to is basic human nature is always envious of what your neighbor's got, and we need to get over this idea of just because my neighbor has a large SUV, I need one. Charlie's just wandered into the fray. Charlie, what do you think about all this?
Okay. Well, I mean, I've stopped explaining to people why I wear vintage clothing. I mean, my stuff lasts.
Yeah.
You know, apart from the aesthetic.
Yeah.
I don't have to go and buy it again in 6 months.
Yeah. I think if what we have in this supposed democracy of, you know, the mark on the bit of paper and then we deploy to wars, I think if anything that we can learn, and you and I have covered this many times on the show over the years, as consumers, that's our real power. Mm-hmm. So if you stop buying things from the Wall Street-funded corporations and say, you know what, I'm not going to buy from Starbucks, I don't care, and just don't do it for a month, and hurt their bottom line, and change what Monsanto do, and change what IBM do, and change what these big corporations who have more money and more power and pay no taxes, and you and I as middle-class white guys are going to be told that we've got to take it in the back of the shorts and dig out, you know, the bankers. I'm sick of it. Enough already.
Let me quote something from Anthony Yenefuck, the very beautifully named Anthony Yenefuck, which must be a hard name to live with. He's a 20-year-old freelance graphic designer from Idaho, and he's down. He's down in Liberty Square right now in New York, and he says this movement doesn't look like anything I've ever seen. Most demos or actions are like, we're going to show up at this march and put out a press release, and then that's it. But one of the most frequently asked questions asked of the protesters is, what are their demands? What do they want? However, what unites them is more often what they don't want. It's their rejection of what they say is a corrupt political and financial system which rewards the rich and neglects the needy. One of the key goals, the protesters say, is building a new system. And it says, people ask about our demands, but we are not saying we're powerless. We want to ask, if anything, we're going to list our goals as we're building them. It's about a world we want to see, a world we're happy to live in, where we feel respected and our voices are heard and respected. It allows for continual evolution. We're building the community we want to live in, and we're doing it in public. So I like this idea that the demands will grow as the movement grows.
We need maglev.
It's where we are right now, is trying to create a new set of values. Mm. And one of the values that should go down to on October 15th is, wear vintage clothes.
Well, no.
And I say, since small is beautiful, I'm going to start buying my underwear two sizes too small.
Well, you're just being flippant now, and that's just...
a change.
I would say, buy good quality, well-made things made by people who care, and stop buying from large corporations who don't give a shit, but for the profit margin. And if they support slave goods, stop buying it. Just stop.
Mm. Don't support slave goods. I think, you know, we need to stop there because you have a piece of music to
I'd
play.
I'd like to play
and
this.
And Charlie is going to sweeten your morning with some hot jazz.
Charlie. It might run a minute into your... It's going to go for 4 minutes 51 seconds. We can just get it in. Okay, can I play this?
Yeah, Charlie, do you want to say something? Here comes Sweet Hot Jazz in 4 minutes and 51 seconds. In the meantime, welcome back, Goulash.
It's always a slice.
Thank you, dear listener, for being here. Get online. Check out the WallStreetOccupation.org. October 15th, this is the end of the end of the end of the world news on CITR 101.9.
First time ever I saw your face.
Ooh. I felt the world.
I don't know where we are. There we go.
Peace.
Peace and love.
We'll be back.